Three to the wide side right for Winston, who's in the shotgun on third down with the snow coming down. There they go, empty. Ford motions wing right. Jameis to throw. Has the ball. Has time to throw. Lofting. Judy has it. Caught it. Inside the 20, near the 15. First down, Browns.
Thank you to the Browns Radio Network. Yes, snow coming down. Understatement. It was a storm where the snow's accumulating through the second half, Perloff. Just gotta love it. Just gotta love
beautiful
football, pure
NFL film style. I mean, it's so funny because it definitely, like, you can't say that this didn't affect the game. Like, if you want to make any outcomes from this, like what it means about the Steelers, it's very hard for me.
You know, yes, this game was about the weather. Obviously, the lake effect snow, it was just coming down in droves. It was sideways. The one thing I will take away is I'm not jumping off the Steelers just because they lost this game. I think that there are things I really like about this team. And number one, I like how Russell Wilson has definitely unlocked George Pickens. They're still able to connect even in the driving snow. I like that they're experimenting now with this Justin Fields thing. Is it perfect today? Was it perfect last night? Absolutely not. But it is an element. It's something different. It's utilizing every single offensive weapon on your roster because they are limited offensively. They don't have tons of weapons. It's not like watching the Ravens. It's not like watching, you know, the Chargers, whoever you want to say. It's not like watching Houston. They are limited in their weapons. And the fact that they're trying to find every single person to contribute, including Justin Fields at times, the backup quarterback, I like this about Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's so interesting about them. They fell from 8-2 to 8-3. Now there's a good chance like they're not going to host a play. If the Ravens can catch them in the AFC North, then it's a tough road. Because now all of a sudden you have another player in the AFC. In the Chargers, you have the Texans. I know the Texans have not looked impressive this season, but, man, they can get that run game and defense go. When they get Will Anderson and Daniel Hunter, I just feel like they're in the mix at the bottom half of the AFC to me. And it's not because of last night. It's just they are not an explosive team. And the defense has been good for 5 years. And where has it led them? Like, what? Nothing to me. I like your points, but nothing is really changing my mind about how I saw the Steelers coming into the season and how I see them now.
How massive is that game at Baltimore? So you mentioned it, right? For first place in the division, this is a really challenging part of the Steelers' schedule, and they play 3 games in 10 days. It starts with your Eagles in Philadelphia on December 15th, then it's at Baltimore on the 21st, finish out with Kansas City on Christmas Day.
Well, this also, the Steelers, like, you have no idea how they're going to play. Their losses are the Colts and the Cowboys. I mean, you have no idea how they're going to play against a bad team, and the Browns. Their three losses are mediocre teams at best. So they'll probably play really well against Baltimore, and then they'll probably lose against Cleveland again or against the Bengals. I mean, they have 2 games against the Bengals. Have the Bengals mailed it in? Are they done?
I don't probably think you can, though, with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, I mean, this offense has been good.
Yeah, but the defense is not good.
It is not terrible.
So, yeah, they're a very hard team to predict, but I just feel like the AFC's gotten too good now. I can't see the Steelers as a bona fide Super Bowl contender.
855-212-4227. You are welcome to weigh in on the Steelers and whether you still consider them contenders at all. Meanwhile, on the flip side for the Browns, I know this is not what it's about today, but it will be about this in the future, which is they need a new quarterback. And we'll see when all the dust settles after Week 12, but they moved down significantly in the draft order last night because they won. So they were 3 yesterday, and now they're all the way down to 7. They no doubt need a quarterback. And while this is super fun with Jameis and the weird things he says, and it's fun to watch Nick Chubb score 2 touchdowns and for Cleveland to win for their fans in a snow game, the bigger goal here should be to lose as many games as possible.
So the victory comes from the Lord.
It can get as high a pick and start over with another QB.
Honestly, do you really feel good if, say, they get to 2 and get Cam Ward? Does that feel like a match? It does not to me.
Does Deshaun Watson look like a match?
Well, we know
the answer to that.
The two are completely irrelevant. I mean, honestly, I feel like Cam Ward, don't send that guy to Cleveland. It just does not work for me.
Well, then you're going to say that about everybody.
I just think it's not a great core. I honestly, like, heck, keep Deshaun and try and get into the Arch Stakes next year. This just doesn't feel like if you're last year, there were six quarterbacks in the top 12. This is not going to be the case this year. You might go one, then seven.
Okay. You want to fast forward and look ahead to Arch Manning. Number one, they determined where Eli was going to go.
Yeah.
You don't think the whole power of the Manning family is going to somehow decide where Arch is going to be drafted? Like, Deion Sanders said he's going to use his influence quietly to get Shador and Travis Hunter to the places he wants them to go, which I'll call BS on that because Deion does nothing quietly. But you don't think the Manning family is going to try to funnel Arch somewhere?
Fair point. My point was not about getting Arch. It was about this is not the year to find your quarterback. Like, you're not going to, I'm not sure you're going to go from 9 to 4 and it's going to make a big difference. There might be only one top five quarterback this year. I mean, Shador will probably go number one. I don't know that the NFL is sold on Cam Ward. I like him personally, but he holds on to the ball for an hour and a half when he gets out of the pocket.
He does, but here's the thing about and what we know about quarterbacks. The draft process is tailor-made for QBs. So they shoot up the draft boards because you'll say, well, if you're going to take them, if you take them at 17, you might as well take them at 4. And this is how teams get into trouble, but all know that happens.
In 2021, there was only one first-round quarterback, Kenny Pickett. Last year, at least you came in the season, and everyone knew Caleb Williams and Drake May were top three picks. This year, you came in with maybe Shador and maybe Quinn Ewers. Like, you really didn't know. So I think you're right, the quarterback always move up, but this is a thin class. I mean, let me just read you real quick Kuiper's rankings. This is from yesterday. Shador Sanders 1, Cam Ward 2, Jalen Milroe 3, Carson Beck 4, Garrett Nussmeier 5. I mean, there's no way Garrett Nussmeier is going in the first round.
No, but we still have a lot of college football left to play on big stages. So if I think these guys, like if you get a big Cam Ward game in a big stage, Carson Beck wins a national title, Jalen Milroe all of a sudden goes and continues his tear, I think these guys are going to fly up.
I don't know. I mean, Justin Fields had an amazing Final Four game and he fell down. I'm not sure.
Still was in the top 10. Or was he 12?
11. He was 11.
Okay.
But
right there.
You got to admit, like, this is not exactly Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May. This is Shador Sanders, Cam Ward, Jalen Milroe. It looks different to me. Maybe I'm naive, but this does not feel like we're going to have anything like last year.
855-212-4227. So that's just a little of what we got out of last night's game. To me, Steelers, still a thing. Perloff thinks it's just same old. And for the Browns, you win, and it was exciting, and it was fun to watch in the snow, but ultimately, is getting a quarterback really the goal here? We'll find out. Okay, this has been a topic that has just been raging behind the scenes on this show. Yesterday, you got Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge, both named MVPs. You also have Juan Soto, who's now going, you have every team is basically coming to sit down with Soto and offer him bags and bags of money. Our question to you, for the next 10 years, would you rather have Shohei Ohtani or would you rather have Juan Soto? Shohei's already signed to the Dodgers. We know the $700 million, all deferred. Juan Soto, it's going to be probably around $700, $660, whatever it's going to be. Who would you rather have for the next 10 years?
To me, no question, Shohei Ohtani. Am I a general manager, an owner?
You're you.
Yeah, I mean, I think Shohei has a chance, and it's not a guarantee to go down as definitely the greatest player of the modern era, but maybe one of the greatest players ever. The Babe Ruth model is fully possible in the sense that started out as a pitcher and then just became an unprecedented hitter. He's won 3 MVPs in 4 years. So if he wins another MVP, which he will, he'll be the only non-Barry Bonds player to get to 4. And if he never has a whiff of PEDs, he could end up with 6-7 MVPs, and that is going to put him in the conversation with Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio. He is the number one star in the sport. He's just watching him at the plate. I mean, he just dominates that thing. I think you would definitely want him. Like, you might have a goat on your hands.
Okay.
And I like Soto a lot. I'd love to have him on the Phillies. But he is just one of a handful of players. Shohei is singular.
Okay, I'm going to disagree that he's one of a handful of players. But in your opinion, you do not think that Shohei should be pitching and hitting. You think he should just be hitting, right?
Yeah, but it's not even a should. Like, I think he will just be hitting. Like, the pitching thing is, and it's a nice little side thing, but he clearly is good enough to win the MVP every year as a hitter. And isn't that enough?
Okay, so I think Juan Soto, though, also in MVP conversations, and not this year necessarily, but that's because Aaron Judge, who he was in the same lineup and providing protection for won the MVP. So to me, I think it's Soto, and here's why. I think Shohei Ohtani, as brilliant as he is, as fun as he is, electric, injuries to me, I think, are going to be a thing because I think he is going to try to continue to hit and pitch. This is part of the $700 million. This is part of what makes him so much different from everyone else. And if he continues to push his body in this way, Pearl, I think you're going to see breakdown because not only would he be trying to do something that no one's done since Babe Ruth, but also his body, he's big. You know, he's a huge guy, and we've already seen wear and tear injuries and fluky injuries, right? So to me, I think that Juan Soto, for as bad as a fielder as he is, he could be a liability out there. For next 10 years, do I want the guy who I feel like I have a lot better chance of him actually being in my lineup every day? Whereas I think Ohtani, the highs are going to be super high, but I think its injuries are going to be a thing.
Yeah, but again, you say Juan Soto is an MVP. Like, Juan Soto's not been in the league 8 years. He had one season where he came in second in MVP. He didn't even make top 10 this year. He rarely even makes top five. Like, I think he's a handful of players. Like, is there any, you can find a Juan Soto. There's going to be guys like that. There's not going to be other Shoheis. The other thing, I hate to bring in the marketing aspect, like, Shohei is the star in the sport.
Okay, it's but
like
that's having a different combo. Yeah. Different combo.
Well, okay, say, I was actually thinking if I'm an owner who's going to spend all that money, I might want to have the best player. Like, even if you get 4 years of the best player, it's like having 4 years of Barry Bonds without the steroids. Like, I would want that, even if you're not going to get the whole 10-yard run. I know it's a different conversation, but I do think it's related. Like, you have, like, the guy who's going to be chasing history. Like, it's a unique opportunity to get this guy.
855-212-4227. If we put the poll up, I have a feeling that it's going to be landslide Ohtani. But I ask people just to remember, it's not anything that's going to stop Ohtani except for his own body. And he's going to be coming off another injury this year. So are you even going to be able to pitch? And is he going to push himself to pitch? And then what happens? Like, this is the part about Ohtani. I hope I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be right. I want to watch him play. But I think injuries are going to be a thing.
Well, the other thing, too, is, like, we're all shallow. We like home runs. Soto's not really a big home run hitter.
Well, in Yankee Stadium, it's not so bad. 41 this year is
Yeah, right. He could hit 41, which is, like, a massive number. It's way above his career high. With Judge and Stanton in the lineup and getting a million fastballs, Shohei's going to be, if he's healthy, in the 50s. Like, you're going to get, again, like, we're talking, like, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, Shohei, he's on that Mount Rushmore. It might not last, but I hate to say it. Like, I'm taking the brief flame of excellence.
I mean, listen, Soto had 35 home runs last year in San Diego. It's not like it's so off. He had 32 the year that they won the World Series when he was in Washington.
Those are pitchers' ballparks, too.
Yeah. But
exactly. They're deeper park.
That's like mid-2000s, like a second baseman on the Orioles hits 35 home runs. I'm saying, like, you want, like, you know, if you really want to put people in the seats, get like the 55 home run hitter. Like Shohei, if he's healthy, can challenge for 50 anytime he wants.
855-212-4227. Next 10 years, who do you want? Soto, Shohei? I say Soto, but it's because of the injury stuff. And Perloff says Shohei Ohtani. EJ, I think you are in the Shohei camp, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I am in the Shohei camp because I think you just have to take the higher ceiling guy. And I think Shohei Ohtani showed this year that he's the higher ceiling guy. I just don't think that you'll ever see a 50-50 season from Juan Soto. But the risk, I think you're underestimating the risk of the Shohei injury stuff, Pearl. I think that is real. He is 30, you know, and
Juan Soto's 25.
Right. Like, Shohei's probably in the prime of his career, but there's a chance that maybe this is the best and now we're going to see a slight slide. But I just still think that Juan Soto at his best, is he hitting 50 home runs, stealing 50 bases? No. He's not that great a fielder, so Shohei not playing the field is not as much an issue for me.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there's different things to weigh there, but I just think Soto's ceiling's too high.
Yeah, but I like Soto. Again, I want him in the Philly, but I don't even think he's like my number two. I mean, I'd have Acuna running him like crazy if he can get healthy. He kills the Phillies. Like, again, to me, Soto is one of a handful, like four players, not like 20 players. Like, I think he's a top five player, but Shohei's a clear, like, number one, and then there's a slight cliff.
Here's the thing about Soto. If you think he's just one of, like, four great players, yeah. And I understand what you're saying, but why is he going to get so much more money than Aaron Judge?
Because the age? Yeah, his age and the length of the contract.
I get it, but
I think owners see that Bryce Harper contract with Philly when he signed for $300 million, 13 years. They're like, give me that. That is like incredible cost certainty.
Double plus that.
Yeah, but by the halfway through, it'll be a total bargain. They'll probably have to redo it. So if you prorate it over time, they're not dumb. They know that the contracts are going up and up and up. It's really not that much. If you get a guy for 12, 13, 14 years who's 25, it makes total sense.
855-212-4227. Okay, so that was something that's been brewing behind the scenes for just a little bit.
By the way, Perloff, if you guys want to do a little side bets for the fans, he said this is definitely a 90-10 poll.
I was exaggerating a little bit, but I'll bet you it's 75 Choi.
I wanted to set a spread there, so I was like, you guys think Maggie can cover the 10?
Come on, Soto.
That was a little hyperbole. I wasn't on air. That's not fair. We say a lot of things in the production meeting, EJ.
And they all usually make it to the show. 855-212-4227. Lots more to do, including our picks, Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff show. So a headline is floating around right now that Jason Kelce is going to host a late night talk show on ESPN. And you guys seem surprised. It seems like a natural evolution for my guy. You go from tush push to,
to
competing with Jimmy Fallon. Yeah. Does this headline surprise you, Maggie?
It doesn't surprise me, and he might be good at it, but it's just a lot of Kelce. Like we're getting an infusion. You know, like when you get some kind of like a liquid IV and it goes too fast and your arm starts to burn a little bit. It's like we need to back off a little bit, I think, on the Kelce stuff.
You know, ESPN has flirted with this idea before of a late night talk show. My former boss, Dan Patrick, either the idea came up that Dan would host at 11, and that would have been awesome. Dan would have been great at it, better than Kelce.
Dan would have been awesome at it. I love that idea when it got rumored. The other thing, I thought the guys from Barstool would have been actually good at that when they did the van talk.
Well, that
thing.
Was a more of a tape variety show. That show was really funny. Didn't last very long.
Well, let's get the thoughts of someone who's in Hollywood, who's in show business. And this is someone who we are such a big fan of. And he's got a new movie out. His name is Clark Peters. And you would know him from a lot of things. The Wire, Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. What a film that was. John Wick, now starring in the new movie called Bonhoeffer. It's a real story. It's a true story. It's a World War II spy thriller. Clark Peters is not only an actor, but he's also a producer and a director. Clark, thanks so much for the time today. How are you?
I'm well, Maggie. How are you this morning?
We're doing fantastic. We've got so many questions for you, but we'll start here. How familiar are you with the Kelce brothers, and how do you think Jason would do as a late-night talk show host?
Oh, you better stop right now. I don't know. I have no idea. You know, I spend more of my time in Europe, you know, than I do here. So when I get references to American personalities and references to television shows, I am completely at a loss.
You are way better off. Jason Kelce is a 350-pound former offensive lineman in the NFL who wants to host a late-night show. Can you imagine?
What could go wrong?
Yeah. I'm sure you've done those shows. That's a hard job, right, to sit and talk to people and make stuff up at a desk?
Oh, yes. You know, fortunately, you have a lot of researchers who feed you questions, you know. But still, you never know where the answers are going to take you. So you have to be, you got to be light on your feet and be able to improvise something really quick while you're getting the next seed in your ear.
Clark Peters is joining us, of course, a prolific actor. He's got so many credits to his name. And, you know, obviously, Clark, we want to talk about Bonhoeffer. This is the new movie that you're in. It's in theaters starting Thanksgiving. And November 22nd is today. This starts Thanksgiving. But quickly, can we ask you about The Wire? I'm sure people want to talk to you about this all the time. It is so critically and commercially acclaimed as one of the greatest shows of all time. You are on that show. Can you just take us a little behind the scenes for people who love The Wire, who this is such a big part of their lives? What do you remember about being on set, and did you realize at the time just how big of a juggernaut of a show that was?
Well, first of all, I go back to saying that I live and spent most of my time in Europe. So coming back to America and being introduced to American culture via Baltimore was a real enlightening experience. To take you behind the scenes you know, Baltimore, although is the subject of The Wire, it's pretty much, it represents pretty much every city in America. It is pretty, the problems that plague Baltimore plague major cities in America, the same problem, whether it's education, whether it's drug, whether it's police corruption, the education systems are being broken down, the way the press deals with these issues, that's the same. To go behind the scenes, you know, there were a lot of characters in The Wire that we as professional actors were working with who were just everyday citizens of the town, of the city. You know, whether they were police officers or city clerks, people in local government, or whether were the drug addicts on the streets and the gangsters, you know. So being introduced back into America via this avenue was an amazing experience. And I have to say that the way that Ed and David had put together the script, I never suspected that Lester was going to last so long. You know, I expected to open up the script and see Kima say, you know, to somebody, did you hear what happened to Lester last night? Boy, he took it. He was just filling up his car with petrol, and you know, he caught one. You know, I never expected to be there that long, and I'm very grateful that I was, and that it was a part of such an iconic piece of storytelling.
How did so many British actors get involved in The Wire? Like, whose call was that? Because it always strikes me when I would watch a show that I'd hear an interview afterwards and I'd hear the accent of the actor, but it felt like there was a pipeline to European actors.
I think what it was is that both David and Ed really, they wanted theater actors rather than film actors. And so for Dominic and I, our first love, our first passion was theater. You know, so I think that the way a theater actor approaches a story is different to someone who's just experienced in film storytelling. You know, film storytelling, the story is broken up into different segments. You know, so you're on Monday, you're walking into the house, you're knocking on the door, and on Friday, you're going through the door, and on the following Monday, you've come into the living room of this place, and you've got to sustain some storyline through that whole thing, which for myself I find rather difficult. But for a stage actor, you know, you're going from the beginning to the middle to the end, and so you have the whole story, you know, a whole episode in your head, and I think that that's what they want to. Yeah, more of that. That isn't to say that they weren't good stage actors there. I mean, Seth Gilliam, you know, the fine stage actor. Of course, Wendell Pierce, you know, as well, spends a lot of time, or did spend a lot of time on stage. You know, so I think that's what they went for.
Clark Peters is joining us. He's an actor. He's a producer. You know him from The Wire. You know him from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. You know him from John Wick. He's got a new movie. It's called Bonhoeffer. It's in theaters starting Thanksgiving. It's a World War II thriller and a true story and a fascinating one at that. Clark, we're a sports talk radio show, so obviously sports movies are really in our wheelhouse. I notice you haven't done a lot of sports movies through your career, but I'm curious if you have a favorite sports movie, or if there's maybe an athlete you'd like to portray someday.
Well, first of all, when I was a kid, rather than acting, I wanted to be a baseball player. My grandfather, at that point in time, the Dodgers had left Brooklyn, but Giants were still in New York City, you know, and the Yankees were just across the river there, you know, and when I was a kid, there was a guy called Willie Mays who was the Say Hey Kid, because he would be out there in the field, and as the ball would be flying out, he would just catch and go, "Say Hey!" You know, and so Willie Mays was somebody.
Howard, yeah.
Yes, Elston Howard. Yeah. Yes, was another character that I would have loved to play. Yeah. But I've done. You know, although I'm not a sports addict, you know, I do a lot of voice for. Or I used to do a lot of voice for ESPN, you know, and for the major baseball league radio stations. So at that point in time, I was very well versed in what was going on, but that was already 15 years ago.
So. Wait, that's great. You were doing voiceover work for ESPN, like you're watching the NFL, something like that?
Yeah, yes, that's right. That's right. And giving and narrating the, you know, some of the bios of the different particularly the college league, you know, the kids coming up, you know, and all of that. Yes.
Oh, I can see that.
That, you know, that did take me back into sports, and I really wish that I didn't lose that gig.
You know the business, easy come, easy go.
Yes, that's right. You know, but it kept me in touch with football, you know, and I didn't realize that I liked it so much even as a kid, you know. But you go to Europe, and football becomes soccer. You know, so you wind up watching those guys.
Wait, do you have a team over there? Who's your soccer team?
Mine would be Man United.
Yeah. Okay.
Manchester United.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got three boys, you know, and I have to settle on that because they each had different teams that they loved, you know, whether it was Arsenal, and they're still stuck on Arsenal. But the youngest was Man U, so I had to support the youngest.
Clark, so the movie is Bonhoeffer. I actually have been thinking about this a lot. There are a lot of Marvel movies and those kind of things, but one kind of movie that seems to be persisting is war movies. Like, there's a lot of World War One and World War Two movies even now that are being made. Why do you think movies about the big wars are so important?
Well, they're important for two reasons. One is that we should have a sense of history. We should learn from our mistake, you know. And I think that's on the viewer's side. We should take a look at these moments, you know. But I think that on the production side, and I think the covert reason for it is that there might be some propaganda that is being subliminally broadcast. You know, that might be part of another agenda, you know, which is why there's so many going on now. I don't understand why there are so many when we should be looking forward rather than looking backward. But I understand, you know, that looking backward gives a person a certain sense of pride or uplifting in some way. But, you know, when you look at what was the last one I saw, there was just horrific, the amount of death and destruction and really what war did, you know, to men and women. There's nothing to really be, it shouldn't really be glorified, you know, and I'm afraid that sometimes it comes up as, I mean, for myself, I remember looking at the, you know, Wild Blue Yonder or Here to Eternity, and you know, and as a child and feeling inspired, you know, to get up and couldn't wait till I was 18 so I could just join the army. But by the time I got to be 18, I had a very good idea of what war was about, and it didn't seem to make sense, you know. So there's something I don't know why, but we should learn from them. But we should move forward. We should, you know, they should be coupled with something more progressive rather than retrospective, you know, that so the viewer is not just lost in the moment of patriotism just for the sake of it, you know. These type of things, I think, and this is what Bonhoeffer finds is that, you know, sometimes these things separate us to the point where where drastic actions are being taken by people who have no idea what the real agenda is, you know. And I think desensitized. We become desensitized by looking at some of the violence and things that we see. You know, we might go, oh, that must hurt, yes, but you know, it hurt for you watching there for a second, but for that person that you're seeing being portrayed there, that's their life.
Clark,
you know, that bullet inside is not a good, it's not a good thing. Yeah.
Clark, we're such huge fans of yours. We can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on the show. Congratulations on the new project, Bonhoeffer, the new movie. It starts on Thanksgiving exclusively in theaters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maggie.
Appreciate
you.
That.
You guys have a good day.
You too.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about, like, there's a lot of anti-war movies, too. Like, I'm not sure I totally agree with that. He's like Hurt Locker. Like, nobody said that and said that's patriotic. So anyway, interesting. And Bonhoeffer, that sounds very, very intense about World War II. Maggie, I will watch any World War II movie. I actually recently watched a war movie the other day.
What one?
The Thin Red Line is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Is that Clint Eastwood?
No, it's Terrence Malick.
Okay.
Yeah, it's incredible. I would highly recommend it. Some of my favorite movies are war movies. Yeah, I didn't think about the propaganda angle of it, but I think I know what he's talking about, too. There's, like, different kinds of war movies.
We got to make some picks. Yeah. We got to do that. We're going to make our college and NFL picks coming up next. It's Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Andrew Bogus is here with the latest. Is Alex Ovechkin healthy yet, folks?
It does not matter. these last batch of headlines are sponsored by PXG Golf. Staying long and straight on the golf course is easier than ever with PXG clubs. Take your game to a whole new level. Save $10 per club at pxg.com/football and use code football. It was week two last season when Nick Chubb shredded his left knee against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Last night in Cleveland, he faced those Steelers again for the first time.
Jameis the snap. Give to Chubb. Chubb running. Chubb! Touchdown! Nick Chubb did it. He stayed on his feet. The Browns take the lead. 57 seconds to go, and the Browns lead the Steelers.
Chubb putting the Browns back in front for good after an 18-6 fourth quarter lead became a 19-18 hole. Cleveland officially won 24-19 when Grant Delpit knocked down Russell Wilson's final pass into the end zone. Here's Jameis Winston on his running back.
Before this game, I told Nick, I said, I got you today. I know how important this was for him. And we ain't gonna talk about last year. Y'all all know the gig, but I'm so grateful and happy that I was able to see a smile on his face after that sweet victory against this team.
Jameis also grateful that they won, period, because after putting Cleveland up 18-6 with a rushing touchdown, he had two fourth quarter giveaways that helped the Steelers take that 1-point lead. This is the Browns' third win of the season, the last two over the Ravens and Steelers.
The horse is prepared for battle.
The Minnesota Timberwolves do not win in Toronto, as we all know. A 110-105 defeat there last night. Their 20th consecutive loss in the city. The last time the T-Wolves won in Toronto was January 21st of 2004. That roster included KG, Sprewell, and Sam Cassell.
Damn!
Don't even bother going.
Wow.
Save on the airfare.
That's amazing.
Wait, you know what's funny? When I was in college, I went to Toronto to go watch a Raptors-Timberwolves game. I had no idea that they were in the midst of a long losing streak like that.
No wonder the tickets were $5.
Yeah, they were.
Manny went to a school that I still don't accept as being real.
It's real.
Buffalo State. That sounds like a school in a TV show or a movie.
Hey, Sweet 16 in the men's soccer tournament. Beat Dickinson. Let's go Bengals. Up the Bengals. Yeah.
I know many people who went to Buffalo State.
Are they better or worse than Manny?
Right on par.
You know who...
They have a type?
Do you know who actually also went to Buffalo State?
RJ Barrett.
No, I wish. It was
Victor.
Do you know
Victor Webinyama?
That gentleman right there.
Well, not Victor Webinyama. Peter Schwartz.
Takiya.
Pico de Goya. Took me a second. Got it.
Caraco.
Wait, no, he didn't.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Peter Schwartz,
graduate of Buffalo State, just like yours truly.
Okay, so it's definitely not real. The Magic got a 119-118 win at the Lakers on Franz Wagner's three with 2.5 seconds left. Men's college hoops last night. Drama in the Bahamas. That's an accidental rhyme. Number 13, Baylor. Number 22, St. John's in double overtime.
The dramatics come to this. 4.1. St. John's 98. Baylor 96. Ejiofor with one more free throw attempt. Bounces the ball, rotates, shoots, and short! And the rebound comes down to Omir with 3-2, and Roach for three at the buzzer. It's good! Jeremy Roach hits the home run shot, and it's Baylor that escapes.
Oh, the great John Minko.
Oh, that was a, like, wow. Putting on a warm pair of slippers. Mm,
tough engineering, though, from Learfield. Former Duke guard Jeremy Roach, the buzzer beating three after two missed free throws. So the Bears beat the Johnnies 99-98 double OT to kick off the Baja Mar Championship.
Why did it seem like there were no people there?
There were people there.
No, I know, but it sounds like it was
pointed in a way that made it sound empty.
I don't know if that was their problem, if it was put strangely into our computer system. Mm. We've had some tech glitches. I don't know who's to blame for that, but that clearly was not good audio quality.
I thought Minko's microphone was still in Queens while the game was going on in the Bahamas.
That could explain it. Do they have weird internet in the Bahamas that you can't? I don't know what's going on.
Wow. Okay. Well, that was cool to hear John Minko.
If you say so.
Did we hear
that St. John's lost?
There you go. That's it. You want to hang around for some picks?
I do not. I have NFL news to break.
Someone lock the door. NFL news, more than Jason Kelce's getting a late night show.
I'm just going to go back and be by my cell phone in case it buzzes at an inopportune time. I'll Adam Schefter.
Oh, yeah, now I can't think about anything else, by the way. So
yeah, I know.
You.
We had a story from Schefter yesterday. Nice. Like,
yeah, it's like all of a sudden, what is it?
Bryce Underwood.
Bryce Underwood is like one of the top recruits in the entire country. He was supposed to be going to LSU. He flips his recruitment yesterday to Michigan.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Of course, who breaks the news? Michigan man himself, Adam Schefter. And Perloff texts our chat. Where do you think Schefter was getting busy while he got the news? Now I can't think of anything else. Every time he breaks a story.
I didn't get that text.
No, it was actually the Robert Kraft story.
Oh, was it the Robert Kraft
story? Yeah, I didn't even know.
Didn't get that one either.
I did not get that one either.
Bogey.
You know, we have separate things going on that we don't want to include you guys on. How am I going to talk about you if you're on the text right now?
We know. That's been the problem from the beginning.
You suck, Bogus. I mean, the whole design is so Andrew Bogus gets the last choice in great debate. That's what we're doing here.
And you're like, left in the air.
Greatest slugger of all time. You're left with like, I don't know.
The cast of characters that you would take to San Antonio over me grows almost weekly. So
basically the entire graduating class of Buffalo State.
I knew you were going there.
And anyone with a nickname that starts with Big, you're in as well.
And Tiny.
Big friendly. Nick, Big Harry, Tiny, Big Friendly, you're all in.
Big Dave, everybody. Okay, thank you. Let's quickly get to some picks. EJ, do you have our record, sir?
Maggie and Perloff's NFL picks.
In fact, have your records, Maggie. So, Maggie, you went 2-3 last week, so you are now 32-23.
Whoop!
Perloff, you also went 2-3 last week, so you are now 29-26.
I was robbed, but go ahead. So are you, Maggie.
So
we're
many
both
bad
robbed.
Beats last week. I'm cratering. I'm falling like a rock.
That was a rough one. Man, we were both upset about what happened. That's
Bears,
the nature
Packers
of
Packers over. Can someone hit a field goal?
That was whatever. Rough.
San Jose State's up 14-0. It's a tie game with 7 minutes left, and they lose by 60 points.
Yeah, that was rough, too.
Thank
Enough
you,
about
EJ.
Last week.
Thank you, EJ.
The slate has been wiped clean. So how we do this, two college picks, one against the spread, one over under, three NFL picks, over under against the spread, and a player prop. Perloff, get us going.
Okay, I'm going to start with college. I've been riding Colorado. They've been covering the spread a lot. They are 2.5-point favorites. Some places three, but I still have them at 2.5 on FanDuel, and I'm taking that number against Kansas. This is a great game. Huge test. I'm not taking Kansas lightly by any means. I just feel like Colorado lately has felt like a team of destiny, so I feel pretty comfortable with that. Now, I am avoiding all the big games for the totals. I don't know what's happening, but I was reading about Clemson.
Yeah.
Your Clemson Tigers. You predicted them to win the ACC.
I did.
Still have a chance. I think they got to run up the score a little bit. They are facing their cross-state rival, I believe, Citadel. And the total is 58.5, and they are 50-point favorites. So I'm basically betting on Citadel to get in the end zone. I'm going Dabo Sweeney running it up, trying to make a statement. Over 58.5, Clemson-Citadel.
Okay.
And you do college.
I hate to do this because I always support our service academies and, of course, we support our troops, but I got to take Notre Dame and I'm going to lay the 14 here. And it's not just because of what happened with Notre Dame and Navy, where Navy came into that game, thought they were going to be competitive, and it was not competitive. I just think Army has not really faced anyone near the caliber of what Notre Dame's defense is. And that's hard to adjust for on the fly. These teams know each other well. It's a weird game in Yankee Stadium. I don't love that, but I'll still take Notre Dame and I'll lay the 14. As far as my over-under is concerned, this pick's a little close to home for me. I watched the Rutgers Scarlet Knights rather closely, and Illinois has been good to me on a lot of bets earlier this season. These two teams combined, I don't see a lot of scoring. 47.5 is the total. I will take the under 47.5 between this Big Ten matchup, Illinois-Rutgers. All right, NFL.
Okay, we talked about this game with Nick Costos. It's an exciting one. The Seahawks-Cardinals actually has a lot of playoff implications. And we talked about Jackson Smith and Jigba. EJ and I come in every Monday morning like, this dude is awesome. His total receiving yards is at 56.5. I'm going to go over on that. I think this could be a really, really close game. It's a one-point spread right now. I say that they go to who is now, ironically, their number one receiver over DK Metcalf, going over 56.5. I'd like the Chargers to make a statement. The Harbaughs are incredible on Monday night. They play the Ravens, host the Ravens.
Harbaugh Bowl.
Yeah. Oh, my God, you're right. So both Harbaughs are good on Monday night. I didn't even think about that. That's a problem. I have a total number.
You got to hurry up.
I have a total number of Harbaughs. And then my total will be KC Carolina. This spread is down to 10.5. I'm going over 43 points. I mean, come on. Chiefs have to wake up at some point. Just wake up on offense.
It's a good one. All right, for the NFL, I'm going to ride with Nick Costos here. I was thinking about this one anyway. He joins us in the 8 o'clock hour. Give me the Seahawks, and I'll take the plus one. Give me a Seahawks, a point at home, Arizona. I get Arizona's coming off the bye. I understand they've been a good team, but I think Seahawks found a little something last week in their win over the 49ers. I will also be taking the total in this game, 47.5. So I'm going to double dip on the same game, and I think this is going to go over between the Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals. I don't think Arizona's defense is still not very good. I think a lot of points are going to be scored here, over 47.5. And for my player prop, I'm going to go to a game that probably many, many fewer people are going to be watching now, and that's the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Commanders. This game is in Washington. Weather is clear. I'm going to take Jaden Daniels over 7.5 carries. I know that he's been rushing and running a lot less than he had in the beginning of the year, but we're talking about less, still 12 attempts, 10 attempts, 16 attempts. Those are the last three games. But I think he's going to attempt more than 7.5 rushing attempts. Give me 8. So give me almost half of last week. That seems right to me.
Get your damn act together.
So give me Jaden Daniels over 7.5 rushing attempts in their game against the Dallas Cowboys. So recap yourself, Pearl.
Okay, college, I have Colorado. Let's go. I have the over on Clemson Citadel, of course. Pro, I have KC Carolina over 43, Chargers plus 2.5, and I have JSN over 56.5 yards for the Seahawks.
Okay, I'm going to take Notre Dame, and I'm going to lay the 14 against Army. I'll take Illinois and Rutgers under 47.5. Give me Seahawks plus 1, Seahawks Cardinals over 47.5, and Jaden Daniels over 7.5 rushing attempts.
Tell you, Monday morning, what we're talking about, Niners-Packers, I have a sense. It's an important game. Like, this is it for our Niners. What, you got to lean? I think you like the Packers.
I do.
You're wearing Packers green.
It's only because of the Purdy shoulder injury. That's it. Thank you, DJ Stewart, Manny Rodriguez. Thank you so much. Thank you to Andrew Bogish and Andrew Kaplan. Thank you to Clark Peters, who joined us, Nick Costos, who joins us every Friday. And, of course, the Weedos, the coffee drinkers. Fantastic job all week. Can't do the show without you. Have a great weekend.